Welcome in to Rinkwise. I'm your host, Evan Marinofsky. The prep season done. It's over. Pat, we're done. There's no more. I mean, they're just off into the abyss we go as the prep season comes to an end. That's Pat Donnelly. I'm Evan Marinofsky. Pat, how you doing?
Good. We're still catching our breath after that flat out sprint last week.
I know. But
yeah, good to take a like step back, look at the season as a whole, and we're doing our all tournament teams right now, so those are fun. Yeah, it's a crazy week.
Yeah, and what's funny is you mentioned the sprint, because the sprint really started the week before last week at the end, where it's like, all right, regular season's coming to a close. You got to kind of step on the gas a little bit, push through. And then when Sunday ended Monday, I woke up Monday, like, all right, I can chill for a couple days. And it's like, no, you can't, because there's a lot of stuff going on. You also have the MIAA, which is continuing its playoffs. So we got a lot of stuff going on there. There's New England regionals this weekend because like this Massachusetts does their state tournament in November. New England does it after the high school season ends. Then you also have, I think, Massachusetts States this weekend for 13s and 14s. But my focus is the MIAA from here on out. That's kind of my focus the next couple weeks. But we're here to recap what happened on championship day and react to it. If you haven't gone and looked, we have videos on both the boys and the girls reacting to the bracket itself, reacting to the quarterfinals. So we're not going to talk a ton about what happened in the quarterfinals. We can dive into the semis a little bit, but our big focus today is the champions, because there are five new champions and one repeat champion from last season. And just kind of, I was at Harvard. You were at Nobles. I know when the schedule dropped, or when the sites dropped for where each tournament was, I heard about girls at Nobles before I heard about boys at Harvard. So I'm like, oh, lucky. Like, Nobles is close by to both of us. Lucky. Like, I'm going to end up being in like southwestern Connecticut. I know it. And then when I got Harvard, I was like, man, Harvard's a good place to be. Nobles, tough rank. What was Nobles like hosting? Because Nobles has a tough time hosting a regular season game, let alone three championship games.
Yeah. First off, I'll start with like the crowd. The crowd in all three games was awesome, especially in the Elite Eight, because Nobles was playing. You were going like three or four people deep standing at the glass. And so it was like kind of a great atmosphere and stuff. But other than that, like, we've talked about Nobles rink before, like, a little tough to get around in some spots just because of how packed it was. Us trying to work, the Wi-Fi Nobles is just like a total dead zone. And everywhere on the campus, like, if I'm trying to like leave after a game, and like, if I'm going right back to my apartment, I know the way. But if I'm going somewhere else and trying to get directions there, I have no hope of getting any directions until I'm back on the main road. And so for us, like, trying to work with hit or miss Wi-Fi in the rink, it was a little frustrating. But, you know, all in all, it was good. We were fortunate to get there like first thing in the morning, because small school was at 11, showed up around like 10:30, 10:45. And so that was before most of the basketball started, because Nobles was hosting NEPSAC Girls Basketball Championships also on Sunday. Which,
hell of a day for Nobles.
Yeah, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to have both at the same time in the same place. But again, like, we're nitpicking. It was a great event. And next year, it'd be interesting to see where it goes, because Tom Reeser said that it goes east-west every other year. So hopefully next year in the West isn't too far. I know last year at Taft might have been hard if we had to do that this year.
It's like a cool, like, a long way.
A cool 2.5 hour drive, I think, from here. But, you know, it was fun.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm surprised, like, the boys did it at Harvard this year. They had St. Anselm last year. I'm surprised they don't do it with the girls at a college as well. I'm surprised they don't do it at a Metro Boston college. Because, again, and I said this to you via text, like, ideally, when you play prep hockey, you hope to someday play college hockey. And when you're at a college rink, there's more places to watch. Scouts, college coaches might be more inclined to come, especially if it's local. So a lot of schools can cut, right? If you do like Metro Boston, think of all the schools around here, plus the Connecticut schools, plus New Hampshire schools, sort of halfway between those. It's the same with the boys. Like, it was at Harvard on Sunday. There were tons of colleges from, I saw St. Lawrence, I saw Colgate, I saw Connecticut schools. Now, again, those guys are probably going to get to wherever it is, but I just think having it in a central location like Boston, where it is somewhat halfway between everybody, is a good thing. I know that's biased because we live around there, so it's like, oh, of course we want that. But I genuinely do. I would not be saying that if I was living in like southwestern Connecticut or upstate New Hampshire. I, you know, Boston's a good place, or at least Metro Boston or somewhere around there at a college rank, I think is a good way for that to be.
Yeah, and you even look at it for the players, like especially like the experience of playing in a college rink, whether or not you're going on to the next level. Like that's just like, even if you do have a Division I commitment, that's still a pretty cool experience, I would imagine, like playing at Harvard, or like I talked about, like Aganis was just open last weekend. There was no BU hockey. I don't think they had any concerts or anything. Aganis would have been right there. Walter Brown would have been right there. I don't know what Matthews was doing, but you know, you have like Bentley nearby with a beautiful new rink.
Bentley would be awesome.
Yeah, and there's all sorts of places to accommodate it, like for like the experience for the players, accommodating crowds, facilitating things for scouts and stuff. And even like personally for me, when I'm just watching the game and writing only, like I like to kind of get up high and in the middle. I feel like that's a good way to kind of see everything and see everything equally. So it's a little harder to do that at some of the smaller rinks.
And at Nobles, you get to stand at the glass, which is low-key one of the worst places to watch a game.
Yeah, because if you're standing like way back in the stands at Nobles, you're blocked out by all the the stanchions on the roof and stuff.
Yeah. So moral of the weekend, Nobles get a new rank. And if next year, go to college if you can. Now, maybe they tried. I don't know. Like,
yeah, it's easier said than done, of course.
Yes. I mean, it's easy for us to sit here and say that. It's another thing to put it into practice. But and like at Harvard, it was cool because the lighting is perfect. I mean, the Wi-Fi was not great at Harvard, I must say. But the lighting was perfect. And it just looks cool. It's a big stage. Like, everyone's on top of the action. It was packed, especially for that Elite Eight game, which is where I want to start. Boys Elite Eight. People are like, can you please just get to the games? Stop complaining about stuff. Okay, we'll get to the games.
Yeah, first world problems over here.
Yes. But if you could fix them, that'd be cool. Boys Elite Eight. KUA beats Cushing 3-1. Jack Sadowski continues his incredible season, finishes with 87 points. 87 points, I think like 36 games or something, bananas like that. Holy cow. I was really happy for him. I was happy for the whole KUA team, but I was happy for him because, again, Arlington kid gets to play at Harvard. All of his family and friends were there, put on a show. He actually scored a third goal. They called it off. They waved it off immediately. And then they like met, even though there's a million video cameras and people shooting in the arena and every video had it going in the net, but that's okay. I had a Hockey East coach walk by me and be like, man, if those Hockey East refs were here, they still would have got that wrong, even with the video, which I thought was kind of funny.
Hockey East refs would have called a penalty.
That's true. Yes. Hockey East refs would have found a way to put Jack Sadowski in the box for like 10 minutes. But I will say, I got to admit to something. 0-3. On championship day predictions, which I gotta give credit to parents of those teams that won, because I got a lot of crap and I deserved it. I completely, like, hands up, I believe it. KUA, I was down by the ice interviewing people for the TV show after, and one of the parents is like, thank you so much for being wrong. And usually as a reporter, you hear that and you're like, ah. But then I was like, that's a good, like, if it's a prediction, you get to chirp me. You get full, you can say whatever you'd like to me. And Kent parents, as I was walking down to the rink, they were just throwing it at me. And then Canterbury, I was recording, we were pre-recording a lot of the TV show that's coming out soon before the game started. And I think it was Ryan Lucciarelli. It might've been someone else. I know he was there and there were a couple others there who were like, why didn't you pick us? And I'm, as I'm recording, I'm like, ooh, I'm like, ah, it was close, this and that. And then they saw me after and they were like, you could have just picked us. I was like, I know, I could have. Which I thought was good. But the Elite Eight game, KUA, to me, I think going in, I valued Cushing's depth more than I valued KUA's high-end talent. And I think where I got it wrong and where KUA clearly got it right is KUA's high-end talent can win a game. Like, they won that game. That top line carried them throughout the entire Elite Eight, but especially that final game. Sam LeDrew does not get enough credit. I know he had 72 points on the year, which is absurd, but it gets overshadowed because someone had 87, because Sadowski had 87. His play in play driving, his work setting plays up, some of his assists, he had two really nice assists among the three on Sunday. He was phenomenal. I think that top line along with Corwith Simmers just is phenomenal. I mean, it's the best. I mean, I would say that in my 2 years with prep, that might be the best line I've seen and of any team. Cushing last year had Gardula and Resendez on the same line. They sort of rotated who was down the middle, between like Emerson Marshall and I think like Jack Costanzo. That line was good, but it didn't do the damage that this KUA line did. And they were phenomenal. And then on top of that, you also had the goaltender, Blake McMenamin, 5'8". He's smaller, but my God, Pat, I mean, this kid stops everything. And he's just so calm. And I saw it against St. George's. He made 49 saves. Because again, we talked about that after that happened. KUA was outplayed, but McMenamin stood in there, made all the saves. Did the same thing against Salisbury, except for that 2-minute stretch where Salisbury scored 3 goals in like 2 minutes. And just like, I've never seen anything like that. But KUA fought back and McMenamin played well. And then the other night, Cushing pressed. After Bronson Hunt scored to make it like, I think it was 3-1. Cushing pressed hard and had all the pressure and got a bunch of chances. And McMenamin stopped them all. So, phenomenal tournament from him. Sadowski, LeDrew, Simmers, Andrew O'Sullivan on the back end, Jack McMinn on the back end. I mean, they were the best team this year. I think I had them ranked number one the most. And they were the best team. A lot of people had like Avon above them throughout the year. I never really understood that. Avon was good, but I didn't think they were KUA, Cushing, even Brunswick tier. But yeah, Kimball Union, that's Whitehead. Tim Whitehead had 3 titles from 16 to 19. Little drought, and now they're back. So Kimball Union, Elite Eight champs, it makes sense. And that's tough for Cushing. 2 years in a row, you get to the championship. I felt really bad for the seniors on that team, like Emerson Marshall and some of the other guys. Because it's hard to get there 2 years. And it's really, you don't get back there all the time. And to get back there and lose twice in a row is difficult. And it's 2 straight years that Cushing really couldn't get anything going offensively in a championship. But a lot of credit just goes to them, too. They had a really good season. Billick was awesome in net throughout the year. Just got beat by Sadowski's shots. Some of those weren't his fault in that championship game. But a good season. And I'm glad that the top 2 teams in prep were there at the end. So it was good.
Yeah, it's especially mentioned like the seniors. That's always one thing that we always kind of forget about when like these championships, we'll see it at MIA this week and we see it in college too, like especially like kids who might not be committed or a little uncertain future, and you just feel so bad. But Sadowski, I was looking, I'm pretty sure 87 points is the most since Jay O'Brien had 80 in 2018.
It is.
Mm-hmm. And then McMenamin, I saw he's obviously uncommitted in being 5'8", smaller goalies will have their challenges kind of making names for themselves. How much do you think this sort of boosts his stuff?
It definitely boosts it. There were tons of colleges in attendance on Sunday. So I think that it definitely helps. If he wasn't already on people's radars, he's only a junior and he's an 07. So he's young.
Yeah.
I think colleges definitely are saying, all right, we got to at least watch him. Because 5'8", you don't see goalies committed at 5'8". Even under 6 feet, it's very hard because colleges, NHL scouts, they want tall goalies. Billick is 6'3" and huge and really good also. But McMenamin, again, I mean, even at 5'8", it's interesting the way he sort of plays the position because he doesn't get beat up high a lot. I would have to watch film on him again, but he comes out. He's sort of aggressive. He doesn't go down like other goalies. He can't because he would leave the top open. He makes it work. So do I think he's going to have a Division I commitment next week? No. But do I think that he's on radars and now being watched and teams are now at least being like having the conversation of, hey, we should look at this kid. Yeah, I think that they definitely are. I'm curious to see what happens with him. Does he go to, I think, select 17 this year? Like, is he at festival? Different viewing things during the summer. Then you also have the fall season and he'll have a senior year at KUA next year. My guess is colleges will watch him. And some might say, hey, we need to see him in juniors. We need to see him against higher end competition before we can really make a decision. Others might say, we're going to take a flyer. We're going to try this because again, he just gets it done. And it's the same with Sadowski. I wrote about this after the game on Sunday with Sadowski with NHL scouts. The knock on Sadowski is his skating. His skating, his frame, this and that. The kid just put up 87 points. Like, he produces
something right.
He produces all the time at every level. You can go back and look, whether it was Arlington, whether it was Select 17s last year, he just finds ways to produce. Is he the flashiest? Not necessarily, but he produces, and there's something to be said for that. And I think it's tough for NHL scouts because you want to be able to defend your pick. Right. You want to be, oh, he was 6'4". really good skater, high-end skill. It just didn't work out, but the tools were there. The ceiling was there. I think some might be hesitant with Sadowski because it's like, well, the skating. But it's, I just, to me, like, 87 points. He always produces. He has a great shot. He has such a high offensive IQ. Is an NHL GM in the fifth, sixth, seventh round going to say, why aren't we picking the kid who just put up all those points? Do I think Sadowski's the top NHL draft prospect in prep? No. But I think, if anything, sort of like McMenamin with college teams, Sadowski has consistently moved his way into the conversation of, hey, we should maybe think about this. Because again, the production's the production. And I could see Sadowski being a kid who goes, does well in juniors, and then goes to UNH, and by his junior senior year is putting up big numbers. And suddenly it's like, oh, we want to sign this kid to the NHL out of college. And it's like, well, you could have drafted him a couple of years ago when he was still producing. And I get it. I completely understand the scout's perspective on it. I'm not being like, what are they talking about? I get it. But I do think there's another side to that argument that needs to be considered at the very least. So
yeah, definitely.
Interesting stuff. Let's move on to the girls Elite Eight. Again, top two teams in girls. I texted you before the semis, and because I saw you picked Williston over Andover, and I was like, I would have picked Andover over Williston. Thankfully, you didn't listen to me. Williston wins over Andover. Nobles, though, takes it over Williston. The three-peat does not happen. And Tom Reeser's probably like, wow, I could have just gone out on a championship, and said he's coming back again, but good for him. But Nobles wins it. What were sort of your impressions of that game and how it kind of came to be?
Yeah, first of all, I was perfect in my Elite Eight predictions throughout the entire tournament.
That's incredible. That pat on the back. That is really.
Yeah, I mean, it went chalk all the way. So like at some one point or another, you're like, it's all the favorites. But counts for something. But this was an awesome game. Anya Zubkowska we talked about going into the tournament where Nobles doesn't give up a lot of shots or a lot of like high danger chances. So I think the hypothetical I said was, if they face a Williston, how is she going to look facing a heavy shot volume? Which obviously throughout the season, there will be games where you're giving up a lot of shots. But on balance, Nobles did a great job of killing plays all season. And she was awesome. Williston was really content to, because Nobles kind of did what they did all season, lock down middle of the ice, tie up chances in the slot and stuff. And so Williston was putting a lot of shots on through traffic, you know, a lot of seeing high shots. There were some second chance opportunities. And Zubkowska got to all of them except one. And just a really standout performance and very deserving of the MVP. I had her for 30 saves by my count, 12 or 13 in the third period alone. It was still, I believe when it was still 2-1, Monique Lyons had best chance of the game maybe for anybody. Puck finds her at the side of the net. One-timer, Zubkowska's there lunging over for the glove save and the whistle. It was a very, very championship-winning performance. But, you know, you look at the rest of the game, it kind of, the start was almost perfect for Nobles because they got an early power play. They scored on a rebound. Catherine McCool, an eighth grader, who has been awesome this season.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Scores on a rebound. And a couple minutes later, Nobles gets another power play. You're like, holy crap, this could really get out of hand. They don't score, but they get another power play. Three power plays early on. They don't score. They get a fourth power play. And you're like, all right, Williston might be taking some momentum after all these kills. But if Nobles gets one more on the power play before the end of the period, that just takes all the wind out of the sails for Williston. Williston made the kill again. So you're like, all right, going to the second could really turn the tides. But it was like the second, I think, is when Williston really started to pick it up. Because I think Nobles, like I said, got the start they wanted, especially with that early goal. And power plays and penalty kills make it hard, especially back-to-back-to-back-to-back. Makes it hard to, especially teams that roll their lines, trust all their lines, and not everyone's playing power play and penalty kill. So it's kind of hard to find rhythm. But on the second, Williston, I thought, started to click. Late power play, chance to tie it up going into the third. And it's a net front scramble. Where's the puck? Nobody can find it. And Sophia Levering comes out of absolutely nowhere, finds the puck, and skates it out herself. Ton of space.
You sent this to me. I was shocked at this.
Yeah, it's a two-on-one and just effortless top left corner wrist shot. Like I there's no other way to describe it other than just cold. It was ice cold, just ice in her veins type of play. So Nobles has a 2-1 lead going to the third, and Lions has that chance at the start of the third, doesn't go, and then moments later Olivia Maffeo, who has done what she's done all year long, makes it 3-0, leads the rush, Nobles is changing off. She's like, all right, I'm just going to head the puck up, beats the defender one-on-one, chips it over top shelf. And Riley Stalker gets Willison on the board late, but kind of by then it was Nobles was kind of doing their thing and shutting them down. And Willison never really got a chance to pull the goalie. So, I mean, it was just the best team did what the best team was supposed to do. I know Willison had been right there with Nobles all season long, but, you know, Nobles just stuck to their identity. It was the forecheck. It was keeping dangerous chances to the outside. Great goaltending, timely goals. And especially where Levering and Mafeos go a little more finesse, Willison never really got a chance to pull the goalie. Nobles just kind of, it was kind of textbook at the end of the game. Killing time, getting it in deep, forechecking, kind of what they've done all season long, especially the first goal. On a rebound, on a second chance opportunity, they'd made a ton of offense out of those types of plays all season. So really just one of those signature games. At home, you win it all. Tom Reeser's coming back, but it's still his 11th championship, first since 2020. Hard to script it better for Nobles.
A couple things. Anya Zubkovska, incredible season. Obviously great defense in front of her, but really held her own, especially against tough Williston team. Is she committed?
Yeah, she's going to Brown next year.
That's what I thought. I looked her up on Instagram, and she didn't have the school in her bio. So I was like, that's interesting. I thought she was committed to Brown. She continues her great season. Were you surprised at this result? I know you picked Nobles, but in the way in which they won, were you surprised?
Yes and no. So in my predictions, I said, if anyone's going to be able to shut Willison down, it's Nobles. I think Nobles is the best team Willison's faced all season, and Willison's the best team Nobles faced all season. Both Willison, Nobles obviously like had the better goal differential and scored more total goals all season, but I would say Willison's offense is definitely more explosive, especially when you have the top line reunited with Lyons, Curtis, and Carroll. Just the way they were playing in the first two games, you look at Nobles and Mafeo, great do-it-all defender, kind of grabs a lot of the offensive headlines on the blue line. So you're like, all right, it's going to probably fall to Sophia Levering and Jamie Griswold, who played fantastic shutdown defense to just sort of keep things to the outside, use their sticks, use their skating to, you know, kill plays and then get transition the other way. So in that aspect, I wasn't surprised because I thought Nobles had the best chance of if anyone's going to shut down Willison, I think Nobles could. But I was surprised that, and I think part of this goes to the first period start that Nobles had, especially getting four power plays, getting a ton of zone time and stuff, and really not letting Willison get a chance to build momentum and roll their lines and get to their game. I was expecting it maybe, a little more back and forth, little more like maybe goaltending duel, where just comes down to which perfect chance is going to sort of like if you saw the Women's Beanpot Championship this year, where it was 2-1 in overtime. It was really tight, back and forth the whole way. BU ties it late. Northeastern wins it early with a perfect play. I sort of like saw that type of thing, just back and forth, goaltending, and timely goals, and didn't really get much of that.
So again, both Elite Eights, top two teams. I mean, that's kind of what you hope for. Obviously, everybody loves an upset. Everybody loves a Cinderella team, an eight seed going all the way. But it is fitting to have the top two teams play each other in the championship. And you kind of get to see who wins, the number two seed one in the boys and the number one seed one in the girls. Moving on to the large school, start with boys. Kent wins 3-2 over Dexter. I was surprised, not so much at Kent winning. I think all three of my championship picks were hard. I mean, clearly it didn't work out for me, but I strained over each pick because Kent, I think, has just as good of an offense as Dexter. And Dexter was the better team for most of the game. Dexter had a lot of chances, but they controlled the play, but there were just times where they just couldn't get that chance. Like, they had chances, but they couldn't get inside ice sometimes. Sean Leach almost scored a beautiful goal that I thought was going to blow the roof off the place. Because again, Dexter's close to Harvard. A lot of Dexter people were there, which was awesome to see. But again, I think Dexter chased Kent the whole game. Like, Kent, I think, scored the first, if memory serves. They were up 1-0, 2-1. And then Gio DeJulian, who has, I almost want to say he's underrated. Because he doesn't have the numbers that like Sadowski or LeDrew have. But he still has, I think, almost 50 points. Legitimate NHL draft prospect. I think he's 6'1", Cornell commit, outstanding center. I mean, outstanding player. And he showed awesome awesome on Sunday. I was talking to one NHL scout and he was saying how like, yeah, this definitely boosts his stock. Because again, you show up in a championship game like that. DeJulian scored with 47.9 seconds left in the game to make it 3-2. And Dexter had tied the game with like 5 minutes left. So I was like, all right, Dexter's coming back. Like momentum had swung in their favor, but DeJulian just went the other way. Nice turnaround, just fought hard in the slot. Turnaround shot, beat Colin Davis to his right side. And it was DeJulian's second goal of the game. And again, like we talked about Sadowski and McMiniman raising their respective stocks for college and for the NHL draft. Obviously, DeJulian is committed. Thankfully, it'd be wild if he wasn't committed in terms of him with the NHL draft. I think this definitely boosts his stock. I think he moves into the, if you know, if he was a maybe as a late round pick, I think he's might be near a definite for late round pick. Again, we don't know what the draft is. Teams can like players and still not take them, especially in those later rounds. Like after the third round, I think everything's sort of you're taking flyers on guys. But he moves into the, oh, I would expect him to be drafted. Whereas before it was like, well, he could be, but we don't know. Whereas now to do what he did on the big stage, and he had 5 goals over Dexter's Kent's 3 games in the Elite Eight tournament. So he was outstanding. Owen Mahar was outstanding. He had 8 points over those 3 games. He was great. Teddy Malgrave is an outstanding shutdown defenseman. Just phenomenal. It's tough because guys like Teddy Malgrave get looked over a lot because they're not flashy. He kind of falls in the same category as like Dylan Hunt, where these kids from Milton, who great defensive defensemen. Hunt put up a lot of points this year. Malgrave, I think, had like 20 points and I forget how many games, but just so good in their own zone. So responsible. Leaders. Malgrave fits that. He's a St. Lawrence commit. So Malgrave was phenomenal. I had him in my all-tournament team. And it's a big win for Kent. Kent's now won 3 of the last 5 large school championships. I was talking to Dale Reinhart after the game, and he was saying how it's huge to win these. Now the next thing is, can we get into that Elite Eight tier? Now, I thought this year could have been the year for them in terms of moving into that Elite Eight tier. I know you and I talked about that when we were making our predictions, because it was like, all right, Kent's a 5 seed. That's low. They could easily go deep. And I think with the roster they had this year, they were good on D. Aiden Hopewell found his game at the end of the season and was phenomenal in the final. I think he had 36 saves. He was outstanding. He really, like, Dexter had some chances. He stopped him. And so I thought this year would be the year for Kent moving into the Elite Eight tier, but they get a larger school championship, which is awesome for them. Great for the program. And they had high-end talent. And also the other side, like, Dexter, young team. Colin Emery was a beast throughout their run. Colin Davis and Nett was really solid throughout their run. Just couldn't get that final goal and couldn't really beat Hopewell enough on Sunday. And that was that. So good win for Kent. Not surprising. I know most people are like, oh, 5 seed 1. That's crazy. It's not really that crazy if you look at that roster and you look at what the expectations were at the beginning of the year. A lot of people thought they'd be an Elite Eight contender, including myself. So yeah, that was the boys' large school. It was good. It was good the crowd though with the Dexter people. So that was fun. That was a good game. That was a good game. I may have had to run out in the middle of the second period though to get DoorDash. So I did miss a little bit of the game. My favorite thing was the DoorDash guy showed. Now it's hard. Harvard's a mess. Not a mess, but it's a mess with so many people. And you have to go around the football stadium to get to the hockey rink. And so I just set the pin for like that between the football stadium and the hockey rink. And so they wouldn't let the DoorDash guy in. So to the like facilities. So he pulled over next to the football stadium. As I walk up, as I run up, he's taking a picture of the football stadium. And so my guess is he was either saying to me, like, I'm at the football stadium, come here, or he was going to put my food down at the football stadium just and take a picture, like, here's your food, like, just a bag of food outside the football stadium. Like, I'm glad I got there when I did. But so that was a little bit. Also, concessions at these games would have been nice. Would have been nice to have some concessions, but again, we're nitpicking here. So that was the boys' large school. Good game, though. Really good game. Closest of the 3.
Yeah. Hey, Nobles had a little like snack table going. They usually do.
Lucky.
Yeah. I just like kind of lived on my granola bars all day. But
I brought an apple and an orange. I felt so healthy. I was like, man, this is perfect. Apple low-key has more energy than a cup of coffee. You know that, right?
Oh, yeah. You said that to me many times.
Yeah, I can't stop saying it.
In like late fall, winter, especially after you said that. And then like they've kind of gone out of season. Like they don't look the greatest at the stores anymore. So just back to like the bananas and the grapes.
I have the Honeycrisp at Stop and Shop. They taste like garbage this time. Awful. Yep. But anyways, back to this. Girls' large school, BB&N, gets past Dexter 1-0. Tough day for Dexter. But, you know, good for them for both. You know what? Good for Dexter, though, for caring about their girls and their boys' teams. Because BB&N's a different story. BB&N's girls' team is phenomenal. The boys' team has been really bad for many years. So credit to Dexter for caring about both teams as much as they do. BB&N, though, wins over Dexter in the large school, 1-0. What did you think of that game? What stood out? What surprised you?
So, I mean, what stood out first and foremost was Alexa Karen, the goalie.
Yeah.
And Drake it. She's a Stonehill commit. Looks like a huge get for Stonehill right now after the season she's had and even like the career she's had at BB&N. Good numbers all throughout this year. In the regular season, I haven't seen updated stats after the playoffs, but in the regular season, career high 950 save percentage. Pretty good. And obviously signature 33 save performance by my count and the large count. She was awesome. So what surprised me was I picked Dexter going in, maybe a little bulletin board material for BB&N. That was the first large school pick I got wrong.
And yeah, you cruised through those picks, all those picks.
Yeah. Small school was tougher. Got two wrong. But anyways, Dexter had like both teams, like we talked about, getting hot at the perfect time. Dexter started the season 3-6. BB&N was 4-6-2, I think, in early January. Somewhere
they were
around
struggling.
There. Yeah, like both teams had bad starts to the year. And BB&N had struggled without Hannah Weyerhauser at the start of the year. And so getting hot at the perfect time, both goalies playing well, Annabelle Aitken for Dexter, Alexa Karen for BB&N. And in the first two games, Dexter just rolled right through their opponents. They shut out Exeter 4-0. That's a 3-6. So you can kind of see it, especially how Exeter struggled down the stretch. And then they get number two Westminster, who Westminster and Choate, and like sort of in that category of best teams not in the Elite Eight, and smoked them 5-1. It wasn't close. And so you're like, I got to stick with the hot hand and go with the hot offense here. Whereas on the flip side, BB&N had picked up their offense, but not quite to the level Dexter had, winning games a little closer, playing a little more defensively, a more experienced team, by the way, and riding the hot goalie. And so BB&N takes an early lead. Savannah Littlewood scores backhander in the slot after just some great forecheck work from BB&N.
Yeah, the goal was early. If you weren't there at the beginning of the game, you missed this.
It was 4 minutes in, and it felt earlier than it was, actually. It felt like it was kind of one of the first few shifts. And just from there, it was Karen who went to work. Like, Dexter, like, deeper offense, a little more explosive, especially in the third. Dexter, I thought, it's like the second period and the start of the third, Dexter was really pouring it on, and Karan was awesome. She tracking pucks well, not giving up many rebounds, killing plays when she needs to, very just poised and sound in her movements too in the net. She's got a bigger frame too, which obviously helps. And then in the third, I thought it was the hallmark of the more defensive team, the more experienced team, where, you know, later in the period, BB&N had a couple just forechecking shifts where not even really looking to get chances that aren't really there, but just content to cycle, content to just go into board battles in the corners and bleed clock. Like I said to Belle Frazier, who was the freelancer writing the story there with us, those are championship winning shifts. It was like two of those back to back, and I just all I could think about. It was a sort of the same story as like the Nobles game where Dexter never really got a chance to pull the goalie, and so it was just a championship defensive effort for the Knights.
Yeah, a lot of credit. I mean, to win a game 1-0, that's going to take a lot of defense for
especially
sure.
Especially when you're sitting on the lead for over 2/3 of the game.
I was going to say, to hold a 1-0 lead for that amount of time in a championship game, that is completely defense and really good, strong, structured hockey. And BB&N brought it. So BB&N, the girls' large school champion. Now it's transition to the small school. On the boys' side, you always, the powerhouses are there in the Elite Eight. The final four for boys were Avon, Kimball Union, Cushing, and Salisbury. So those are four prep school powerhouses. We write about them a lot. We talk about them a lot. Kent and Dexter for the boys, always there. Canterbury and Rivers. Now, Rivers is another good, strong prep school for hockey. They were down last year just because they were young, but this year they get those top young talent like Carter Meyer and Finn Sears and Sam Podolfo and stuff. And They get all the way to the championship, which is incredible. But Canterbury, let me read you Canterbury's records the last couple of years. So this year they went 20-10-2. Last year they went 12-16-1. So you're probably thinking, oh, that's a big jump, right? That's a big jump to then winning. Let me read you the rest of their records. 7-14-4. Then there was the COVID year. Then 4-22-2. 4-23-2. 10-17-3. 5-21-3. 11-13-6. 8-17-4. So that's the last like 8 or 9 years. They've not been good. They've been bad a lot of those years. And I was talking to head coach Patty McCarthy after the game, and he was saying how it was those kids like Sam Siapa and Ryan Stratton who decided to come to Canterbury that sort of revitalized them last year and brought them this year. Jake Stevens was another, Ryan Lucciarelli, Patrick Heslin. And so it's great to see a program like Canterbury win. That's a big program shifting win. They were an underrated team all year. I don't think I ever had them in my top 10. They were always in the mix. They were always kind of at the bottom of like in the hunt. They proved themselves to be a top 10 team this year. They were phenomenal. They outscored Tilton in the first round. Then I think they snuck past, I think it was Pomfret in the second. I think it was like a 3-2 win. And then they get past Rivers 3-1 on Sunday. They get a goal early from Logan Martell. They held on to the lead. Rivers pushed hard. I mean, you see it in championship games when a team is down. I would say like most of the third period, Rivers was down 2-1 and they pushed hard and they got a lot. They were aggressive. They went for chances. They had long offensive zone sequences and Canterbury kept him outside. Maxime Pitts had a great game in net. I think it was 23 saves and made the necessary stops. And Canterbury held on. They bent. They didn't break. They got a nice empty netter at the end. And that was that. And it was a great thing to see for Canterbury because, again, as I said, to have a, I think it's hopeful. There are programs around prep right now that are not doing so hot. I mentioned like BB&N Boys as a perfect example. Like, look at the records. The records are awful. The last 10 years, they're really bad. Canterbury was that same kind of, they had a couple years in there. I mean, they had a 10-win season in 2017. They had 12 wins last year. But for the most part, they were well under 500. And I think it's encouraging to see that. I don't know what happened behind the scenes in terms of, did they start caring about boys hockey more? I don't know, but they figured it out. They figured it out. And now Canterbury is somewhat of a destination. And now it's like, oh, I think for kids who are looking at prep schools and if they live in the Connecticut area, or there's a lot of kids from New Jersey and New York on that team, they might say, oh, Canterbury's a good team. They just won. I want to go to Canterbury. And so I think this does a lot for their program. This builds things up for sure. The question is now, can you sustain it? We saw Taft win the large school last year. They took a little bit of a dip this year, but it's still, I mean, they're in that post-winning time where there are higher expectations. So the question will be, can Canterbury duplicate a similar season next year and continue? Will this help them recruiting? Which I would assume it would. So to me, that was the story of that game, was Canterbury's rise as a program. I think even if they lost that game, it's still a big deal for Canterbury to even be in that game. One other person I want to give a big shout out to is Jason Delahoy, the goalie for Rivers. He was phenomenal. I mentioned to you, Rivers was aggressive in that third period. Canterbury got a bunch of chances from Rivers, defense jumping in the play and things like that. And Delahoy was perfect in the third. He kept Rivers in it. Obviously didn't get the win, but he kept them in it. And he's 5'7". 5'7". And that kid was standing tall. So a lot of credit to him. But again, the most credit goes to Canterbury for pulling out the win. And I think it's, as I said, it's a hopeful thing, I think, for other prep school programs, hopefully, who look at them and say, oh, we're not doing so hot. Canterbury did it. We can do it too. So I think that was the big takeaway from that. Girls small school, New Hampton, the champion again, beating Groton. Again, they beat Groton last year in the final too, right?
Yep.
So, wow. I mean, that, can we do a three-peat next year of the same matchup? Like a seven-game series over the next 7 years. What did you think of that game?
Yeah, I mean, so these were both teams also sort of in that elite eight bubble throughout the season. So kind of felt natural that like their number one and two seeds in the small schools felt kind of natural for them to meet. This was one I got wrong in my picks. Hampton, it was proved that they are more experienced. They have the championship after last season. Deeper offense, obviously the championship experience, a little older team. I think those were the biggest things for them because they had an awesome start, even though it was only 1-0 after the first period. Groton didn't really get to their game and consistently sustain some zone time until like sort of getting through the second period and kind of early in the third. It was a little, I think New Hampton really just kind of smothered them and just took over throughout the game. You had the game-winning goal late in the third. Caroline Thomas kind of right place, right time. It was kind of broken play behind the net. Puck works out to her right at the side post. Veronica Hadamoski had no chance. Easy goal for Caroline Thomas for the game winner. Vera Lee, I didn't think, was super busy on balance of the game for Canterbury. Mm-hmm. But when she was tested the most late in the second, early third, and like Groton's trying to make a late push, they pulled a goalie. She was awesome when she needed to be, made the necessary saves, locked it down. And even then, like when Groton was getting their pressure, I didn't think they got a ton in grade A ice. There was like kind of two back-to-back chances where she kind of stuffed Tina Scalise like kind of near the side of the crease. But other than that, it was a very like stout defensive performance from New Hampton. And the opening goal was just gorgeous on the power play. And I misspoke. It was 0-0 actually after the first. Scoring didn't open in the until
how
the
dare
second.
You? How dare you misspeak?
I know.
Come on.
Yeah, it was a power play goal. Huskies working around the umbrella. And Julia Laughlin, who had a fantastic tournament. I don't think she scored, but, you know, a bunch of assists. I think maybe 5 assists in the 2 games. Just awesome pass to Reese Luber at the far circle for a one-timer. Luber had 2 goals in the semis. Opens the scoring in this one. She also had an awesome tournament. And Groton sort of, like I said, sort of kind of gained some momentum at the second. Tina Scalise, who else, ties it early in the third with a shot from the circle. It kind of looked like one Lee should have had, but from my vantage point, it was a little tougher to see. It was at the other end of the rink. And just like I said, the timely goal for Thomas, and it came down to the goalies. Both goalies were awesome, but Hadamoski had no chance on the game winner.
Yeah, I mean, again, that's big for New Hampton to win their second straight over Groton. So, yeah, I mean, it was a good day. It was a good day of hockey. I mean, I think 3 straight championship games are always good. It can be tough, I think, for teams because it's the day after the semis. Like, a team like Kimball Union is traveling 3 hours down to Boston from where they are to play, and you have a lot of other teams traveling. And you're playing at a neutral site. Neutral site games are always weird. The Super Bowl is kind of weird. It takes a little while for teams to get into their groove. But 6 good games, 5 new champions, 1's the same. Sorry, I don't mean to diminish. New Hampton's ahead.
No,
New
yeah.
Hampton's here. Everybody else is here. So credit to them.
Yeah, and it's like kind of like we said for like Alexa Karen in BBNN, where she was like, just when you look at the goalies, she was busy all season. Looks like a great get for Stonehill. Vera Lee, who's a UNH commit, faced the most shots of any, I believe the most shots up there of any small school goalie.
That's incredible.
And, yeah, and like 91 save percentage in the regular season. So not sparkling, but, you know, got the job done, was at her best when she needed to be. You look at the other end, Veronica Hadamoski was great all season, was there for her team in the end, but, you know, unlucky. And someone who's uncommitted too, be really interesting to see. She's a senior too. So,
yeah. I mean, again, I would assume there were a lot of colleges there on Sunday.
Yeah, from what I could see in my little corner of Nobles, I'm sure there were more like hanging around. I, in the small game, a couple of Yale jackets, I think a Sacred Heart jacket. So kind of interesting to see there.
Yeah, no, 100%. Scouted well, and boys was the same. A lot of schools from a lot of places. Obviously, Harvard was there because it was at Harvard. Now, before we go, there's no other better way we could end this podcast than with our great producer David Yaz and our famous segment Overtime.
Overtime.
Yes, indeed. Welcome back to Overtime, where I lob some questions the way of our panelists here. They are unprepared for this. So we're going to go kind of simple today and just 3 questions for each of you on the great sport of hockey. So you can take a look at your screen. And question number 1, what are the mistakes that will drive coaches crazy more than anything else? So good advice for our high school players out there, or really anybody. In your experience, what's the answer to this? Evan, you go first.
Ooh, I would say the mistakes that will drive any coach crazy, you pass the puck in front of your own net. That's always a no-no. I know that sometimes it can work out, but when it goes wrong, it goes wrong. It's very easy to critique. And so I would say passing the puck in front of your own net is always a no-no, or sometimes mostly a no-no. And coaches always hate it.
Good one. Pat, your thoughts?
Yeah, I would sort of fall in the same line, especially where everyone loses their mind over turnovers. And if you're hemmed in your own end, you get a kid trying to make a play, maybe trying to do a little too much, turns over, it's in the back of your net, off the glass and out. That's all you need. Don't be a hero.
I'll add another just for fun. I'll add one more. When a player tries to go end to end and take it through like five people and it doesn't work. Like that's it. It works like 5% of the time. And that's when you see the highlights, but the 95% of the time that doesn't work and it gets broken up. Play either goes the other way or just dies and you miss out on an offensive zone sequence. Coaches also hate that too.
I would say too, it's tough because like it's way easier said than done. But a lot of kids, when I played, I did the same thing. You don't think you have as much time as you really do. You rush, you make a bad pass, you don't put it tape to tape, you never pick your head up. A lot of times you have way more time than you think you do.
Yes.
Take the extra second, pick your head up, find the good pass. Because there, and again, easier said than done, there are some plays where you're like, oh man, that was there. So.
All right. Question number two. Do you have a puck that you keep as a souvenir? And if so, what is the story behind it? Pat, would you like to begin on that one?
Oh, yeah, I have a couple. There's one that I have that's like kind of really cool. I just found it like walking through Walter Brown at BU one day. I think it was during a practice. I was about to go talk to Brian DeRocher for the game preview story for the women's hockey team. And I see a puck that has the 2020 Frozen Four Boston logo. It was supposed to be at Aganis. It never happened because of COVID. Mm. So I think that's pretty cool. Like the
collector's puck item.
Yeah, never happened.
Also, I'm pretty sure what you did was what they call stealing it. But that's okay. I would have done the same thing. Evan, you got any pucks in your collection?
There are two. One was the other day. I went up to the press box for the Elite Eight game at Harvard, and a puck went over the glass, over the netting, and then there's glass in front of the press box. Went over that, said a Harvard thing on it, and no one took it. So I was the last one out. I grabbed it. But my real souvenir one is a Dennis Seidenberg signed puck that me, my dad, and my sister won at a Bruins game years and years ago. It was like our section got picked. There's actually a picture of me on the Bruins Twitter or Bruins Facebook page, like holding up the puck. I can't find it. It's so old. I think it was like 2015 or 16, but it was random because you always think you're going to win the 50-50 raffle. You think like your section's going to get like the Sal's pizza. Never has happened, but I have got a Dennis Seidenberg signed puck. So that was always sitting in my childhood bedroom.
Now, I don't have any signed pucks, but the thing is, that's the kind of thing that you got to be prepared to have somebody sign a puck because you need one of those special silver pens or something, right? You can't just sign it with any old pen.
Yeah.
No, it's gotta be even legit.
a Sharpie wouldn't show up, right?
No.
Unless it's a colored Sharpie of some sort. I don't know. Okay. These are the questions that keep me up at night. We will move on to the third question, and it is as follows. This is the most important question for overtime. What member of the cast of Friends would make the best hockey player? Our YouTube viewers are looking at the six members of the cast of Friends. Now, it's the characters, not the actors. Matthew Perry wouldn't make a great player right now, seeing as how he's no longer with us. But Evan, why don't you take the lead on this?
I will say this. I never watched Friends. I am firmly a Seinfeld guy. I can't bring myself to watch Friends. But if I had to pick one, I'll go with Ross. Because the actor who played Ross, who I forget his name, he was in Curb Your Enthusiasm for a little bit. David Schwimmer. Yes, he was in Curb. He was great in that. And he came off as kind of a jackass. So I would assume he played a similar-ish character in Friends. That makes a good hockey player. So I'll go with Ross.
The only downside would be the whining on the bench. Like,
yes.
Coach, when are you going to pull the goalie? That's my Ross. Thank you. Pat, your answer to this question.
Yeah, I'm also a Seinfeld guy, but I have watched Friends. I'm going Joey. Rangers fan, kind of like a little bit of a dopey jock, Joey.
Joey, okay. Well, he's built for it. We don't know how coordinated he would be.
Yes, he'd be like the kid every high school team has that maybe isn't the best skater, but hits everything that moves. And when he does score every once in a while, everybody goes crazy.
Right. You both may have hinted at something, that Friends is one of the more overrated shows in television history. And so I don't blame you if you haven't watched it or watched the whole thing. Side note, personal note, two of my fraternity brothers at Penn, they were key writers, lead writers, the first season of Friends. And some of those episodes, when there's a throwaway line like, oh, did you hear from Eric Prower, Joey? It'll be like the name of one of my fraternity brothers.
Wow. That's very cool, though.
Yeah. Jeff Astroff and Mike Sykowitz, they've gone on to other cool things as well, but never really. I mean, how could you hit the success of the first season of Friends? And I maintain that after they left the show went downhill, and like everybody was just dating everybody else. And so, Evan, you're not missing much.
Yeah, I haven't had the huge desire to watch Friends. I know it's been on Netflix forever, or it was. And I never really, like, I'd see clips of it and I'd be like, meh. And I guess you could see clips of Seinfeld without context and be like, meh. But still, Seinfeld, I think we can all agree Seinfeld
holds up.
Time. Yeah. So, yeah. I'm a Seinfeld guy.
Curb, I guess, is not a sitcom. Curb, you have to give Curb a seat at the table there, too.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah. At any rate, terrific job on Overtime. Gentlemen, you each get a packet of Chiclets. I'll send it over. The gum, not teeth that have been removed from hockey players. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Yaz. As always, enlightening, great. Me and Pat both went Overtime, which is fun. Yeah, I guess the listeners are the real winners of Overtime, which is all that matters. We're here for the listeners. We serve you. But anyways, that's been Rinkwise. We got a lot of stuff coming up. MIAA. End of prep, lots of season wrap-ups. There's a lot of stuff going on. But for Pat Donnelly, I'm Evan Marinofsky. Rinkwise, the Siemens Media production, produced by the great David Yaz. You New England Hockey Journal fans, have a great rest of your week.